Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in a good way, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. You'll remember, because I tell you most weeks, that Isaac Asimov once said the most exciting phrase in science is not Eureka, but that's funny. Respectfully, Isaac, mate, you can have a bit of both. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not a real doctor, of course, as evidenced by the mug that I've got, Michael. And I'll post
it doesn't count as evidence if you buy me a mug that says not a real doctor on it.
I'm afraid it does.
Oh, does it? Is that how it works?
Right? Yeah. There's just more evidence of you not being a real doctor. You don't identify that as evidence. But jokes aside, not the kind of doctor you'd want around to stop, you know, disease or age-related illnesses.
No.
It's not a useful doctor.
No, which is pretty much what the nurse said to me at the A&E yesterday. It was like, oh, physics, is it?
What, as in she said, did you say Dr. Michael Brooks here?
Because she looks up my notes, and on my notes it says Dr. Michael Brooks. So she's
why doesn't it just say Michael Brooks?
I don't know, because...
you do know, because you're like, I'm sorry, can you just put doctor? You're like Ben Kingsley, insisting on getting called Sir Ben Kingsley. You're a monster.
No. So it comes up on my notes. She says, oh, what are you a doctor of? And I said, physics. And she said, oh.
She understood the assignment. That's the point. That's the point.
Yeah.
So do you want me to change the mug so it says not a useful doctor? That cost me £12.
No, it did not.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought, well, when you go on these mug designing websites, which I'm sure you've been on, they always quote you the price of if you're buying 100. You're like, oh, these mugs are only £3. Amazing.
You should have bought 100. I bet there's loads of people who'd want a mug like
well,
this.
Well, I bought two. One for me, even though I won't really use it, because not only am I not a real doctor, I'm just not a doctor. And then obviously the one for you. But it's nice. That's a nice gift.
I'm very grateful. Thank you very much for your humiliation gift.
I mean, listen, if we are going to start merch, It's not a terrible place to start.
No, it's a good place to start. That's right.
I've given away the margins now, though, probably. I don't know what a reasonable price for a branded mug would be, but we're going to need to sell quite a lot. Now, I did mention the fact that you wouldn't be any use in terms of sort of fighting disease or age-related illnesses for a reason, and that reason is that today we're going to be talking about longevity.
Okay, right.
Now, you must have considered how long you've got left. And you've broken the back of it, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, every morning when I wake up, I think, right, how long have I got? And I've broken the back of it.
And you're counting in years or days?
Definitely years, but broken the back of it is a nice way of putting it, isn't it? It's like, I sort of feel like, you know, okay, I'm doing well, but there's a long way to go still.
Sorry, in what way are you doing well?
Because I'm still fit, healthy and alive,
yeah,
basically.
Okay, yeah, fine, yeah. All right, fine.
So, which is, you know, a plus. And but I'm sort of conscious that, you know, these days people are living to sort of 90.
Too old.
And it's a long way to go, isn't it?
For me, absolutely. When I hit 40, I thought, well, it's kind of downhill from here, but at least I'm past halfway. Like in my head, 80 is the cutoff.
Yeah.
I don't really want to go past 80.
It's funny, my father-in-law, who turned 80 this last year, announced basically, it's like, 85 will do me.
Oh, so book him in, send him to Switzerland. Sort
of, everyone was around the table going, what?
Well, what do you do with that information?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had a bit of a family argument, I think, basically.
Basically,
you'll die when we're ready for you to die, rather than him saying
that's
85
not,
seems
that,
seems enough.
That's not right. You've got to let the old boy go when he wants to.
I think he'd probably go sooner if he could.
Why would you want to keep someone alive who didn't want to be alive?
Because we like him.
Yeah. Is he going to be adding that much value past 85? I mean, no offence. I've not met the guy, but is he?
Oh, you have met the guy, actually.
Oh, have I?
Yeah,
well, there
yeah.
you go. I'm totally forgettable.
Yeah.
Get rid now. And if you're listening, obviously, sorry.
That is very beautiful. I like to fill my time doing things like playing sport, right?
Yeah.
And that is getting increasingly
difficult.
Well, I can
see from your
physique. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course you can.
Yeah.
As the nurse said to me, good quads.
Did she really say that?
Yeah, she really did.
After tutting at your qualifications.
Yeah, yeah. Good quads. Not a real doctor.
I'll get on the other side of the market.
And, you know, that becomes increasingly difficult. So it's about quality of life, isn't it? That's what you want. Not necessarily, you know, I just want to keep going, but I want to keep going in a way that makes it, like, enjoyable to be alive.
Do you know what you're talking about?
What am I talking about?
You're talking about health span rather than lifespan.
Yes, I am.
And I think you're absolutely right to be thinking about health span rather than lifespan. Because fundamentally, who the fuck wants to live to 150 if 70 years of that are just miserable frailty?
Exactly.
That's rubbish.
Yeah.
That's no good at all.
Yeah.
So you want health span. You want to increase the length of life that is without pain.
Yeah.
Or like,
yeah.
By and large,
but
without
it
pain.
It should be enjoyable.
Where you can do stuff.
Shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't just be clinging on.
No.
And that's your father-in-law's point.
But
he doesn't want to just be clinging on.
He doesn't. No, good on him.
Yeah, I knew I'd bring you around.
It's not me you've got to convince.
Who have I got to convince?
Oh, I'm Philippa.
Oh, you know. Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
She's quite fond of him, so, you know.
Yeah.
Difficult.
Well, I'll drop her a line. I'll see what I can do. I don't know what I'm putting in the subject of that email. A thought, ..
Re your dad.
Want to live forever.
If you could, would you want to live forever? Or at least a little bit longer? Humanity has long dreamt of overcoming our physical decline, pausing aging, and escaping mortality. And in the last century, through science and medicine, life expectancy has shot up. A disease that might have sent you 6 feet under 100 years ago can feel like nothing more than the common cold today. If we've increased the average life expectancy before, who's to say we can't do it again and again? The world's oldest living man recently celebrated his 113th birthday. Could someone born in 2022 go further? That's why this week we're asking, how long could someone born in 2022 live for? As you'd expect, we have recruited an expert to help us answer today's question, because that is very much within the format of the show. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Brandon Mill-Holland, who did his PhD in genetics at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, which I've got to say is a great... I don't even know where
I mean,
it is.
He wasn't a real doctor either, Albert Einstein, was he?
What am I doing? Sending a mug to the grave?
I'm just saying the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, it sounds like a made-up institution. I mean, no disrespect to our expert this week, obviously.
A certain amount of disrespect, I think. But it sounds like, it sounds baller.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's probably one of the best, isn't it? Let's be honest.
But yeah, I know what you mean, though. Like, it does sound a bit like you've said quickly, make up a clever-sounding college.
Yeah.
Someone's been like, the Albert Einstein College.
Look, where my certificate through the internet's come from.
Yeah, yeah. It's a subsidiary of the Trump University. I was excited to speak to Brandon, though, because I didn't immediately discredit him, because he does a lot of kind of data science, but particularly because of his work on the biology of aging. And there are two types of statistical measures that we're going to be discussing today: life expectancy and life span. Now, I suspect that you know the difference.
Well, life expectancy is the kind of average at any particular time in history, at any particular place.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Lifespan is... No, I'm actually stuck now. So what lifespan would be the...
So you're right about life expectancy. So it's effectively, if you take an average number of people, they're all born at the same time, then it's the age that they might be expected to live to. And it varies according to when they were born.
Right.
So that is more sort of intuitive, I think, in a way, because when we're talking about, live to like 80, 85, 90, that's all life expectancy that we're talking about, really.
Yeah.
And then lifespan is actually the upper limit. So it's a kind of maximum theoretical number. And it's really hard to calculate, because how do you know? Like, do you just go off the oldest ever person? But that doesn't tell you what that's the upper limit. It just tells you that no one's got past it yet.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, it's a fiddly one.
All right. That's interesting.
I think you can definitely get some idea from the oldest person. So the oldest ever verified person was a French lady who lived to 122. But I don't think that would make you conclude that the lifespan of humans is 122. You know, it's going to be that or more.
Yeah. Okay. Probably. Right. So that's the lower limit of the lifespan.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And then the other thing, as we mentioned, is health span. And I think that's quite important, because all of the stuff that we're talking about, really, health span is the interesting bit.
Yeah. If you're living to 122, you're probably those last couple of years, I'm guessing they're not great.
Yeah, but actually,
last
couple of years is not bad. If you're fully healthy until you're 116, and then you've got a few iffy ones at the end, that's not bad. That's a very, very long health span. But the fact is, most people, you know, start to kind of feel it a bit from 70 plus.
I bet her children were starting to feel it as well, the lack of inheritance.
Yeah, I don't know if they necessarily celebrated, but we don't know, actually. I've not heard any comment from their children, so maybe.
It's like, don't worry, we're going to come into a few hundred grand in a couple of years. we'll be fine. She's 100 now.
I wonder if you get anything, like an accolade of being the oldest. Feels like you should. It's not going to be financial, going to benefit from it.
Like, you should be sponsored by, like, you know, some probiotic yogurt or something. Once you're the oldest person on earth, all your expenses are paid for by...
Yeah, you know, by Actimel.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I think let's get in touch with Actimel. Yeah.
If you're listening.
Let us know.
we'll take a cut.
I actually, just to make sure that I didn't, balls it up, really, I got Brandon to explain the difference between lifespan and life expectancy. So if he in any way deviates from what I've said, then it might be that he's wrong.
Life expectancy is the average age that we would expect someone to live. And you could say that as life expectancy at birth, or life expectancy at a certain age. Lifespan is the maximum age that we would expect anyone to live. And lifespan is always higher than life expectancy. Most people are going to, or half of people will meet their life expectancy. That's the definition. Lifespan, only one person is going to get to lifespan. And life expectancy has been going up for quite a while, still continues to go up in most populations even now, but lifespan has become stagnant for decades.
10,000 years ago until the 1800s, pretty much life expectancy stayed the same. Didn't really matter where you were from. So you could be a hunter-gatherer or you could be a wealthy nobleman. Life expectancy was about 35.
That feels mad.
Yeah. But the majority of that is because infant mortality was so high. So like 40% of children wouldn't make it to adulthood. So that drags.
So the average is dragged down.
So it's it's an odd one because you think, oh, what, everyone was dying at 35? No, not really. So if you made it to past 20, then your life expectancy would be something like 60.
Right, yeah. You did the calculations and discounted everyone who's like died before the age of 10, for instance, that would massively increase the life expectancy.
Yeah, so then life expectancy would be more like in probably like 50 or something
Okay.
I would say. And you've got to think about, they look at death rates a lot, or sort of mortality rates. So in any given year, how likely is it that you're going to die?
Yeah.
And if you imagine the curve, in infancy, even now, it's relatively high. Like you are just a bit more fragile.
Globally,
sort of true. I mean, obviously, there's going to be big variations according to place in the current day. But you'll see this in pretty much all animals, really. Just being young, you're just a bit more vulnerable.
Yeah. I've watched those documentaries.
Yeah. And then it really dips down. And so when you're in your sort of teenage years until you're into your 30s, it's pretty low, like chances of dying. Pretty low, and then from your 30s it starts creeping up again, and then in your 70s and 80s it starts going exponentially higher,
right?
And so you're really just quite likely to die in your 70s and 80s, which makes sense. And obviously the ways in which you're dying vary, so it's either going to be sort of external factors like accidents or disease, or sort of internal factors like aging. And so what's really bizarre is that, you know, 1,000 years ago, not many people were dying of old age. Many people were getting to that that point. So aging
is
something.
Like cancers weren't.
Yeah,
taking most people, or a high proportion like they are today.
Yeah, think about when cancers are coming in, like in your sort of 60s, 70s, 80s. Most people aren't getting to that.
Yeah.
So not really an issue. So it's not. Yes, you could say we live in a more carcinogenic environment, but also we're just getting to an age where it's just much more likely.
Yeah.
So it's quite. I think it's useful to think about both, you know, those external and internal factors that are ultimately going to lead to your demise.
But the big question then is, like, can we do anything about them? Like, you know, we've got so far because of various sort of medical improvements and everything else. Is there an upper limit, I guess?
So we've actually, so sorry, I forgot to actually tell you what the life expectancy now is. So global life expectancy up to the 1800s, about 35. Now it's 72, between 72 and 73. So it has, it's over doubled.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Part of that is undoubtedly the fact that child mortality has massively reduced.
Yes.
But also, it's just better public health.
Yeah.
Better sanitation. Better medicines generally.
It's sort of science.
It's absolutely science. Yeah. I mean, it's all science. But you're right. The question then is, okay, so we've got to this point. Can we push it any further? Is there any more room in the sort of in the human system?
Yeah, because lots of animals live for a long time, don't they?
Yeah, so if you look at vertebrates, I think the animal that lives the longest is the Greenland shark. It lives in very cold water, interestingly, because it means it's got quite a slow metabolic rate. That's good for anti-aging.
Yeah.
And those, again, tricky thing when you're looking at animal ages is, how do you know how old it is? When you just find, unless you monitor it from the moment of its birth.
I see your point.
you're just meeting, what am I doing? Asking the animal.
Do they have like rings if you cut them open, like trees?
So it turns out this was actually the oldest tiger. Obviously, it's dead now because I had to, to slice it like a stick of rock.
That's so Victorian science, isn't it?
Yeah, they would have done that.
They would have done that.
But yeah, the Greenland sharks live to about 400, which is not bad.
No, it isn't bad.
And we're actually, we're right towards the top of life expectancy of mammals now because of science.
Like, but we're nowhere near like ourselves. Multiple centuries, are we?
No.
So, you know, we're not doing 400 years.
No, we're not doing.
We're not even doing near 150 years.
Not yet, no.
Right.
So yeah, this question of whether we can extend human lifespan is quite controversial. Actually, I'd say it's very controversial. I don't think there is agreement on it at all. I think I know what I believe. So I'll tell you. I'll tell you at the end. Yeah. But Brandon's work does point to a limit. He thinks that there is a limit to human lifespan. And he thinks he can show it through the maths.
The limit to human lifespan is primarily biological. You could say that in the past there might have been an environmental element where basically if people are succumbing to diseases from their environment or other environmental causes, that nobody is really reaching the outer limit of biological lifespan. But now that there's been so many improvements and we're seeing that people, the oldest person is not really getting very much older, and that, you know, the record was set by Jean Calment in 1997. She was 122 when she died. Nobody else in the 25 years since then has even gotten to 120. And that suggests that there's some sort of biological limit that with our current technology and even improvements in that same paradigm of technology, that we haven't been able to change that limit.
So Jean was 122. She was still smoking at 117. And then 117 thought...
Did she give up at 117?
I think so, yeah. She's like...
She'd probably been smoking for 100 years.
Yeah, exactly. She was cycling till she was 100.
That's good.
It's very... I mean, I don't know if she was just trying to live the French cliche.
Did she have onions around
her neck? Onions, yeah. Breton hooped top. Little beret.
Gauloise.
Smoking a Gauloise. Yeah, till she was 100. It's not bad.
That is good, isn't it?
But what Brandon is saying is that when you look at the numbers, she is more of an exception than a rule.
Right, so she's a big outlier,
he thinks that the limit is 115. He thinks that is human lifespan.
Yeah.
And he's saying that as you go up and up and up, so through 70s, 80s, and 90s into 100s, your mortality rate every year just keeps on going up exponentially. This is controversial. Because as soon as he published this paper, so it was in Nature, it was about 6 years ago, lots of other scientists sort of jumped on it and said, no, that's you're wrong, you've mishandled the data somehow.
I bet those scientists were the ones who'd taken the venture capitalist money to kind of, you know, produce longevity drugs and things like that.
Probably, yes, but I don't know. But they said that actually something really bizarre seems to happen. So when they look at, so someone looked at nearly 4,000 very old Italians, and I think it's all centenarians, which means 110 and over.
Right.
So I think it's just under 4,000 of them, and it actually looks like their mortality rate just plateaus. So it just stops. Sort of stops increasing, and no one can really explain why that would be, but that when they look at it, that's what they find.
So break that down for me again. So you've got these 4,000 Italians who are 110 and over,
yeah,
and they're no more likely to die in the next year than they were like in the previous year or whatever. Is that basically what it means?
Let's say it's a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
You go, when you're 110, 50-50 chance of dying. 111, 50-50 chance of dying. 112, 50-50 chance of dying.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't, but that's that's what the numbers seem to say. I mean, you're still going to die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But your chances of seeing your next birthday are higher than when you were in your 70s and 80s.
Yeah, which is, you can see
that's
why
insane.
You can see why Brandon's saying that's got to be nonsense.
Okay, so obviously I'm really fascinated by just analysing the numbers, but I've also read lots and lots about interventions like drugs,
yeah,
genetic engineering that actually promise us longevity, you know, stopping those processes that are problematic sort of at source effectively. So surely we can increase lifespan by those kinds of interventions.
That, I think, is where all of the stuff that we've been talking about kind of potentially ceases to apply, because if we're going to talk about sort of interfering with the natural progression of things within the human body, then you may be able to overcome what you call like a natural limit, if there was a natural limit. So Brandon thinks there is a natural limit. Lots of other scientists think there isn't, but they're both sets of people are talking about natural lifespan. And I think these kind of techniques are quite sort of invasive in terms of your metabolism and stuff like that, and really like resetting cells. So it's like a big interference, and may well be able to overcome certainly any kind of limit on lifespan, but really massively extend health span potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of this stuff is in the really early stages, but you will be very unsurprised to hear that a huge amount of money is getting poured into this kind of research
in California, presumably.
In California, in Silicon Valley, because those guys
don't want to die.
Don't want to die at all, because they're narcissists. Hey, I read somewhere that the anti-aging industry, and when I say anti-aging industry, I don't mean sort of superficial sort of creams you're rubbing on your face to get rid of
stuff
wrinkles.
You use.
Yeah, not that stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although I'm sure that's worth a lot of money as well.
Worth a lot of your money.
Yeah, I talk about proper sort of like genetic interventions and all this kind of anti-aging drugs. And yeah, it said that that industry will be worth $600 billion by 2025, which is quite soon. And consequently, stuff is happening. And mainly it's to, you know, worms and stuff.
So we're making worms live a lot longer.
Mice are getting involved. So they've managed to extend the lifespan of, I think it actually might be my old friend, the C. elegans.
Wow,
yeah, yeah. I think they've extended his lifespan by about 600%, which is good. But also, like, it is just a... I love the C. elegans, but it is a flatworm. It's not a human. It's a different thing. So I asked Brandon whether he thought these breakthroughs were promising in terms of getting past his perceived lifespan limit.
I think that it's going to be a lot more difficult to increase human lifespan than it is in small organisms like worms. For example, if you look at worms, you can either change one gene or you can put them in a calorie-restricted environment and increase their lifespan sixfold. If you take a bit more complex organism, like a mouse, you can create about a 30% increase in lifespan. So that's going from 600% to 30% with the more complex and more human-like, you know, from a worm to a mammal type organism. If you take monkeys, which are very close to humans, and you do a calorie restriction, you see barely any increase in lifespan. It's actually debatable whether they benefited from that at all from a longevity standpoint. And that is kind of suggesting that as the organism gets more and more complex, that it's a lot more difficult to move the dial, so to speak, on lifespan. Then another issue is that if you look at something like weight versus lifespan, if you made a graph of the mass of an organism and its lifespan, you generally see a correlation where heavier organisms live longer. So a worm, which is super tiny, microscopic, you know, couple weeks. You know, flies, pretty short-lived. Mice, a few years. Elephants, you know, will live decades. Humans, lighter than an elephant, heavier than a mouse, also live decades. So humans are actually up above the line on the mass versus life expectancy graph. And that suggests that we humans, evolutionarily, are somehow already kind of optimized for longevity given our biological constraints. And that suggests that further improvements will be harder to achieve.
I'm loving his graph. And obviously the fact that we're above the line suggests that science has got us there.
Yeah.
So, you know, we evolved along with everyone else, but we also got science involved and technology. So presumably that may be why we've been able to sort of outdo that weight versus lifespan.
Yeah, because I think we would have been below the line
for
most of humans' existence.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, we have bucked the trend a little bit.
But those sharks, I mean, they're heavy dudes.
Yeah.
Living 400 years.
Yeah.
So they, with no technology that I'm aware of.
Yeah, who knows what they're up to down there? They keep themselves to themselves.
Yeah, they're just in the gym the whole time.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss the future of the anti-aging field, and I'll get Brandon's thoughts on people challenging his work, which will be interesting. And, of course, we'll be asking him today's big question: how long could someone born in 2022 live for?
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back. So, to be fair to Brandon, I thought he has engaged with all of these people coming out and saying your work's nonsense.
The haters.
And I just thought, well, I've kind of got to ask you about that.
The only way that they could argue that there is no limit is that technically there is no age at which a person is certain to die. So anybody, however old they are or whatever, they could keep on living. And, you know, there might be a 50% chance they'll live a year, and there might be a 1% chance, but it's never a 0% chance. So you could argue, oh, you know, there's no limit in that sense. There's never going to be an age where you're at your 125th birthday and the Grim Reaper shows up and is like, what? You're still around? No, I can't have that, and takes you away. So there's never a certainty of death. But at a certain point, the probability of living past an age becomes vanishingly small. You could say it's a coin toss, and some people argue that the chance of dying actually becomes stable at 50% past a certain age, that it doesn't keep going up, it stops at 50. I actually think most evidence points to it keep going up. But even if it is stuck at 50%, you know, you could win this year's coin toss, and you can win next year's coin toss, but 10 coin tosses in a row, 20 coin tosses in a row, you know, if you had that kind of luck, you could go to Vegas with a dollar and become a millionaire at the roulette table. Well, that never happens. And, you know, after 20 coin tosses, you're probably going to lose one of them. And, you know, those are not good odds.
The idea that we can just, like, tweak something, you know, like a worm, you know, like we've done with the worms, and just fix that just seems like, you know, optimism going too far.
Aubrey de Grey, who you'll be familiar with, does make quite an interesting point. So he's this anti-aging researcher, eccentric guy that we've both had dealings with before. Looks sort of like a wizard.
Yeah,
very
Gandalf.
Very long, very long beard, very charismatic, very passionate speaker about this stuff. And he thinks that there's a totally artificial distinction between disease, the stuff that we say, okay, with medical science, we're going to try and tackle.
Yeah.
And then aging, where we just go, well, that just happens. You can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
But he says that that's just a semantic point. Like they're all the same thing. They're all just things that are ultimately potentially going to kill us. And for some reason, we've just decided that we're not going to tackle this vast suite that we bracket as aging. And he's kind of right.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You do get the point.
The older I get, the more I take his point.
Yes, yeah. And his real approach is, can you fix stuff as you go along? Can you just look at some of the individual processes involved with aging and tinker with those or repair those like you would if you think your body is just an incredibly complex machine, which it sort of is.
Yes.
Then you can extend the working life of a machine by occasionally like going in and giving it a service, replacing sort of parts here and there.
Yeah.
And it will last much longer than perhaps it was sold to last for.
Yeah. But I mean, his optimistic viewpoint is that you can do that faster than it degrades. So eventually you get to the point where you can just like just keep something alive forever because you're constantly able to replace parts, and those new parts will have a longer lifespan.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, I think, honestly, I don't think we know. It feels unlikely, doesn't it?
It does feel unlikely.
But we don't know.
But then, you know, if you talk to people before the Industrial Revolution and said, oh, you know, the average lifespan is going to massively increase.
Precisely.
It would have felt unlikely, wouldn't it?
Yeah, really unlikely.
Because everyone would have said, well, it's been the same for the last, I don't know, how many 100,000 years. Why is it suddenly going to jump? Well, maybe, you know.
It's not an understatement to say that there is an absolute multitude of approaches in various different well-funded labs all over the show working on different angles with which to try and do stuff like this.
So, it's the big problem of our age to solve, isn't it?
Maybe. I mean, I think there's some ethical considerations here, moral and ethical considerations that don't get as much airtime as they should. Like, what do you do if suddenly everyone is living to 120? Like, what does that do to your economy? Who's looking after them? Do they need looking after? Are you saying, actually, instead of working until you're 65, you're now working until you're 105? Yeah, do people want to do that?
None of those reasons are a reason to say, yeah, I'm afraid you're going to have to die.
So
we're not going to make decisions based on that, which are good ethical and
but also who's going to be able to afford this stuff?
Yeah, okay.
It's going to be people. I'll tell you who would afford it, and I'll tell you who would be on it.
Elon Musk. It might be too late for him.
Maybe, but imagine someone like him who I think it's not unreasonable to say most people would like if he wasn't around for that long,
yeah,
gets hold of. So any sort of dictator nut job running a, you know, totalitarian state or whatever, those are the kind of people who are going to be able to mobilise and afford these kind of treatments and potentially extend their lifespan. Well, and all those, and that's not
all the Silicon Valley narcissists.
Yeah, and that doesn't feel particularly comfortable to me. And I think that when so all of the sort of very pro anti-aging. That doesn't quite, you know what I mean, don't you?
Pro health, pro radical
life extension, yeah, people. When you talk to them, they're like, but if people are fit and healthy, they'd love to work, you know, for another 40 years.
You and I are fit and healthy. Do we like to work?
And I'm like, well, no, that's not right. Also, like, it might be true for a very small section of people, probably people who just, enjoy their work / just use their brains solely for their work. But I think the vast majority of working people in the world are going to absolutely hate the idea of having to, yeah, just like double their working life. Yeah. I just don't think that's going to be particularly appealing. So let's just talk about a few ways that people are looking at tackling aging. So one is looking at senescent cells. So senescent cells are often referred to as zombie cells, and they are cells in which they've sort of expired, but they haven't destroyed themselves. So normally when a cell reaches the end of its life, if it's functioning properly, it just gets destroyed. And so that's fine. Then the waste is processed. All good. That happens countless times throughout your life. But with senescent cells, they sort of die, but they also don't properly die. They just sit there like zombies, hence zombie cells. And they're implicated in causing inflammation and associated with lots of different disease. And they don't proliferate, they don't multiply, they just sit there, clogging up the system, accumulate, and they're no good. And they're definitely you can see that they're totally linked with aging processes. And so they've looked at ways of tackling that in mice, and had some success. So actually, as Brandon was saying, you can get a mouse to live 30% longer by getting rid of some senescent cells. So you can inject you're injecting a protein that reminds those cells to clear off.
Yeah.
And so that could have. So you're just like clearing the junk. Yeah, like it makes sense. Yeah. You're just sort of clearing the body of junk.
Yeah.
So that's one possible approach. Lots of different drugs being developed by lots of different people that might do a job on that. And then you've got the closest possibility, I think, to an actual anti-aging pill, which I guess is what everyone would really want. No inject, just you take a pill and it just takes care of stuff. And that's this enzyme called NAD+. And that, it's too complicated to go into, really, but essentially it tells cells to sort of look after themselves. Your cells are constantly kind of repairing and repairing themselves, keeping themselves in working order. And when you're 50, you have about half as much NAD+ as you did when you were 20.
Right, yeah.
So your cells just get a bit less good at
they're sort of lazier.
Yeah.
It's like basically a life coach for cells, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And you can't get the life coach in directly, but you can get in another molecule that will then turn into the life coach within,
nice.
Within
stealth
the cells.
Life coach.
Yeah, stealth life coach into the cells. A lack of low levels of NAD+ are linked to all sorts of Alzheimer's, skin cancer, MS. And this has again been tried in mice, and it just sort of it just helps regulate the cell metabolism, and again you see positive effects in terms of their sort of behavior, so they behave like they're younger.
Yeah.
I think you get a bit of increase in longevity as well, but that could actually be one where you're like, that's increasing health span.
Yeah,
not necessarily
sign me up for that.
Yeah, so that's quite That's quite good.
And I don't need a huge like percentage lift on
No.
Just a little tweak.
Yeah, just a little tweak. Yeah. I mean, it would get addictive, wouldn't it? Go, I just have one more of those pills.
So good.
And then the other, inevitably, is stem cells. So just whether you can introduce. So your stem cells are constantly producing new cells that can then differentiate into all sorts of different types of cells. But your number of stem cells gradually decreases with age. So it's just, can you introduce more? And the answer is, yeah, maybe. And again, it looks like you might be able to do that for mice. Who knows if that then translates from mice to humans?
And you do have to be careful, don't you? Because things like that can induce runaway sort of cell division, like cancers and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's by no means is any of this stuff easy,
right?
And then actually, the most interesting approach, I think, at the moment is a guy called Dr. Sinclair, I think, who again is, of course, he's on the mice, and he there's a great bit of footage which you can see on YouTube where he's managed to make as in part of his research, got twin mice, and he's made one of the mice much older by, I think, he's introducing senescent cells. I think it's that, and you've got these two mice. And they're twins, and one looks fantastic, and one looks old as fuck, and like it's sort of grey and like just gnarly. Exactly the same age, genetically identical, but one of them is fucked. And obviously you don't really want to be doing that.
No.
But I suppose the idea is if you can do that, and you can probably do the reverse process.
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, it sort of feels a bit cruel to me.
I mean,
He's saying is, if I introduce loads of senescent cells into this mice, look what happens. Look what happens. And everyone's like, yeah, what have you, how's that contributing?
Well, I mean, think society. How the twin feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's all relative. The twin's like, I feel so alive. but he thinks that the key might be in the epigenome. So he thinks that the fundamental cause of aging is degradation of your epigenome. So not your genome, but how your genome is expressed.
Right.
And he also thinks that he might know how to restore your epigenome. So effectively turn the clock back.
So it's sort of hacking the genome effectively by changing its environment and the inputs around it.
But... Yeah. So there was a guy, you'll have heard of this guy, Yamanaka,
who
won a Nobel Prize for discovering these four factors, Yamanaka factors, that if you introduce them, they can do exactly that. They can sort of bring a cell back to its kind of almost like its embryonic state. So this guy Sinclair has done this with mice, and very specifically, he's taken an old blind mouse, which sounds like it's going to be from a nursery rhyme, and
did he cut off its tail with a garden knife?
Yeah. I don't know why he did that. Just to have some fun.
Just couldn't help myself.
It felt so right. He didn't use all four factors. I don't really know why. I think he used three. Just in the retina cells of the blind old mouse, which effectively reset the epigenome of those retinal cells, and it restored the mouse's vision, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
Because
and then the mouse looked in the mirror and said, God, look at the state of me.
Yeah, kill me now. that's not slowing the process of aging.
That's reversing.
And that's when I think it gets really interesting.
So because that's a game changer, isn't it?
Well, then all bets are off. Like the idea of a limit just becomes a nonsense.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's like, I don't know how many times you'd be able to do that. Like, I guess, actually, I mean, this is horrible, but probably what he's doing with some mice at the moment is restoring their sight and then waiting until they go blind again and then trying to restore it again and seeing how many times he can go through the process.
Because
who knows? Probably pretty well. closes his perfectly working eyes.
And thanks God he's not a mouse.
Again, who knows who would have application to humans. But that's the closest that it seems anyone is coming to actually reversing biological aging. And I guess that the linkage between your chronological age and your biological age, I think, is fairly strong. But the idea of this is you could totally break that link.
So
you
could be so up for this.
Yeah. Well, that's the way of, you know, that's healthy life for as long as you want it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Quite cool.
I mean, I'm not a narcissist, as we know, but I would definitely take that. I mean, who's going to refuse that? So that's going to be a question of how good is it and how much money does it cost and how often can I do it?
Yeah.
And if it's safe.
Also, you this is horrible, but obviously you can't just do that to your entire body, because if you turned all of your cells back to sort of stem cells effectively, then you're just going to be like a massive
embryo
tumor. That's where none of the cells know what the fuck they're supposed to be doing. I guess you really don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bad night out.
Yeah. Yeah. How was it? Well, look at me. Well, you look young.
Like a young tumour.
All right, so the question we started with was, how long could someone born in 2022 live for? And obviously, I asked Brandon.
Someone born in 2022, their life expectancy at birth will probably be between 70 and 80 years. It depends upon their gender and what country that they were born in. And we don't know for sure yet, because the demographic data is always a little bit delayed. So we have to wait for 2022 to be over, and then we'll get the data. But it'll probably be in the 70 to 80 range. Somebody born in this year, their lifespan, their maximum potential age that they could live to, as opposed to their most likely age that they'll live to, I would say their lifespan will be less than 125 years old.
I mean, I sort of feel like statistics are on his side, but there's a part of me that says, but we've only just got into this whole area.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
something will happen.
Yeah, I respectfully think I disagree with Brandon. I think if we weren't doing anything to try and tackle this, yeah, fine. But we are, and loads of smart people are on it, and they've got loads of money. And we're having encouraging results in animal models.
So then it becomes a question of whether you believe those animal models will transfer to humans, which Brandon obviously doesn't, and for good and understandable reasons. So then it depends on whether you're an optimist and say, well, actually, it could.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a probabilities game, obviously. Mm. But in a sense, I'm sort of thinking there's a decent chance that we might see some kind of big step change in the next, I don't know, like 50 years.
Yeah.
Which means that somebody born this year actually will see, you know, more than 125 years.
Yeah. I think that's quite likely, actually. And I certainly think that health span could improve dramatically.
Yeah.
And if this epigenetic tinkering, if that works, then you really could extend lifespan drastically.
Yeah.
I just don't really buy the idea of a limit once we've started interfering.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of with you. Do you know anyone who's born this year? Any friends with babies?
Yeah. So I'll monitor her.
Yeah, if you could just keep on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's got one that's like 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Liverpool fan.
Good.
His son might live to see Liverpool win the Premier League. 125 years? Oh, it's asking a bit much, isn't it?
I mean, it's awful banter. That's what it is. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Brandon Milholland. We also do really love hearing from you guys, so if you have a burning science question you want answering, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod. Thanks.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.